It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
We are going to talk today about intolerance and bigotry. We're going to talk about Islam. We're going to talk about the Jewish settlements in Israel and the peace process, and a few more thoughts about the situation with Bishop Eddie Long, all today, right here, live on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us today. Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Or get in the discussion on our Facebook page at Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown, on Facebook. Okay, first let me ask you a question, and then I'll tell you exactly where we're going in the program today. Have you ever experienced intolerance, bigotry, hatred by those who claim to be tolerant, loving, accepting? Maybe on your job, in the name of tolerance or diversity, you were put down, scorned, had your religious beliefs mocked. Maybe in your school, people that claim to be tolerant and loving and accepting ridicule, mock you. Maybe in some other professional position or in a community position. Have you experienced intolerance, bigotry, hatred directed your way from someone or from a group claiming to be tolerant, loving, accepting, inclusive? Let me tell you what got me on this subject. Yesterday, if you remember, in talking about the allegations against Bishop Eddie Long, I talked once again about the fact that we cannot ignore what's happening with gay activism in our society at the same time that we must focus our attention on having a loving and compassionate response to homosexuality in the church, working with people patiently, graciously. I didn't get into that at length yesterday, but that must be the case, saying homosexual practice is wrong, but Jesus died for homosexual, heterosexual alike. Well, I gave you a couple of headlines of some things happened this year, last year, where a man won the drag queen honors at George Mason University, or a woman was elected, a teenage woman, to be homecoming king in his particular school, and just said, look, these are issues we can't get away from. Well, I found out last night that the show that I did earlier this year on Tyra Banks, we recorded it last November, it aired in January, on transgender children, where I had a very intense five-minute segment. I found out that that aired again yesterday. My 5 minutes were together with two other people plus Tyra Banks, and it was a pretty intense discussion, hard at times to get a word in edgewise. Well, it re-aired. And it got me thinking about some of the responses to that episode. All right, first, let me just paint the picture. This was a show about a very painful, difficult situation. Little children who are convinced that they're trapped in the wrong body. A boy who's convinced he's really a girl in a boy's body, or vice versa, to the point that parents don't know what to do. Again, this is a very serious issue. I believe the power of God can set anyone free. And I believe that there are some people who, dealing with this from a psychiatric viewpoint or psychological viewpoint, may have insights that are helpful for the families. But bottom line, it's a painful, difficult situation that we can't just mock. And these little kids are brought out. Their parents are brought out. And the audience is very sympathetic towards them. There's a clip. Here's a little boy dresses as a girl. He's convinced he's a girl, maybe 7, 8 years old. And the interviewer on this film clip says, speaking about boys' private parts, isn't that what you have? And little boy said, oh, it's just a birth defect. It's very painful to watch. I was on briefly to take the other position that the best thing is to help kids from the inside out. And when the Tyra folks contacted me, they were referred to me by Focus on the Family. I said, look, just so you understand, my doctorate is in Near Eastern languages and literatures. I'm not a professor in this field. I'm a minister and a professor, but I've worked extensively in these areas with different people who struggled, etc. So I can speak to this with with some degree of authority in terms of having studied it and interacted with professionals on the subject. All right, so here's the clip where I'm on. What I want you to hear is Tyra Banks sets the stage, and then Kim Pearson, who I'm sure really cares about these kids. She's a transgender advocate as well as an advocate for, quote, gay and lesbian rights. She came through these struggles with her own child and concluded that her child was trapped in an opposite sex body and should identify as not who she was biologically, but who she felt she was on the inside. One of her colleagues that helped start this, their child committed suicide at a certain point. So I'm not doubting her concern. I'm simply saying it's misguided and ultimately not God's solution for sure. So what I want you to hear is Tyra sets it up. Kim Pearson speaks. I speak. And as soon as I start speaking, getting into things, interruptions, challenges like this. But I want you to hear it. And then I want you to hear some of the reactions to what I had to say on YouTube when this was posted from those who are tolerant and loving and accepting and open-minded. Okay, so this is what happened on the Tyra Show.
We're talking about transgender kids, kids that are changing their genders at a very young age, as young as 6, 7, and 8 years old. And now it's getting very controversial because there's, you know, different sides to the story and to the debate. Can a child really know if they are transgender? Or what age do they really know that they are transgender? Can they get therapy and get over the feeling of being born the wrong gender? So these are all the questions that we're going to talk about right now. Joining us are Kim Pearson. She's the executive director of Trans Youth Family Allies. Dr. Marcy Bowers, who is a transgender herself and is a specialist in transgender surgery. And Dr. Michael Brown, a professor and minister. Advocate for transgender youth. Explain to me why you think that a child, like a 6, 7, and 8 year old child, not even to me, to everybody, that you feel that they can make that decision to change their gender.
Well, actually, I don't believe it is a decision, and I don't think they're deciding anything. Mm-hmm. Just as you knew growing up that you were a little girl, mm-hmm. they know that they're little boys and little girls. Not every child who expresses some sort of gender variance is transgender. But it's my experience that transgender children do know.
Now, I know, Michael, you disagree on Kim's position. Why do you disagree?
Well, we're both here because we love kids and we care about them. Our hearts go out to them. But this is a known psychiatric condition, gender identity disorder. It's on the records. It's a known psychiatric condition. It's been diagnosed in hundreds and hundreds of kids. Oh, okay. And there are treatments from the inside out. Compassion causes us to look at the whole thing as opposed to, here, look, there are people.
Already
you could hear being interrupted. What you can't see on the radio is the person next to me, Dr. Marcy Bowers, who's a man who had sex change surgery years ago and now performs sex change surgery on people. He was grabbing my hand and just trying to stop me from talking politely. And okay, so that's the way the whole thing went. In fact, that's one of the stretches where I got to speak the most before I was interrupted. And the producers behind this, you know, they want you to interrupt. And I said, well, I'm not going to be rude, but I knew it'd be challenging to get the point across. Okay, so here are some of the responses. Let me single out one from a young lady who is 16 at this time. Here's how she described herself last year. I'm a 16-year-old girl who is fairly intellectually mature, I should say earlier this year. I'm probably the most intellectually mature teenager in my school. I am open-minded and a loving person. And by the way, she herself identifies as transgender. So obviously, a kid that struggled some and may be mistreated by others. But here's the description. I'm an open-minded and loving person. So Vanessa watches this 5-minute segment, and here's what she has to say. Dr. Brown is completely corrupt. That man is a corrupt blank. Well, that's because I'm pulling comments out from many. That's because Dr. Brown was talking nonsense. What he was saying was completely false, and he knows it is false. He's simply destroying society. What makes me absolutely furious is people don't know about this major corrupt behavior. Dr. Brown is blank, who isn't worthy of title doctor. Don't listen to what Dr. Brown has to say. He's corrupt and religious. What's the difference? That man is a corrupt blank. Wouldn't you like me to explain why? I'd be more than happy to. Yes, he only got powerful points across to naive people who prefer to listen to a corrupt man than two highly successful, intelligent women. And moronic deceiving blanks are moronic deceiving blanks. Fact. Well, that dude is a total blank. Did you know that? Want me to elaborate on why he is a blank? Laughing out loud. Dr. Brown is a blank. Want to know why? I also refuse to acknowledge his PhD. He deserves to be beaten. just like trans women get beaten worldwide and murdered even. He is the reason why trans women are prevalently murdered each year. He was lucky I wasn't there. I would do a lot more than grab his arm. I would like to do a lot of violent things to him, too. I would horse kick him in the blanks while wearing high heels. I hate that man. Yes, he is a blank idiot. Don't you just hate him? God, I hate him. How fascinating. The voice of tolerance? Love? We're going to dig a little bit more into this, share some insights, and then fabulous article about Islam and how we relate to it by Mark Stein. Updates on the Jewish settlements in Israel and more on Bishop Eddie Long coming your way. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. Have you ever experienced intolerance, bigotry, hatred directed towards you by those who claim to be tolerant, loving, accepting? 866-34-TRUTH. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us today on the Line of Fire. By the way, if you'd like to interact in a more extended way or catch our podcasts, if you missed the live program, just go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and click on the Line of Fire. You can get into discussion about previous shows and subscribe to the podcast there. Okay, after I was on Tyra Banks' show, because I was interrupted so much and the thing was such an intense 5 minutes total with several different voices speaking, I thought it'd be wise, just take a little time, explain the main points I was seeking to communicate on the broadcast, just on a video clip, put it on YouTube so that people would understand where I was coming from. I want you to hear some of the responses to these comments. The whole clip is 9 minutes, but I'll play the first minute for you so you can get a feel for this.
Well, based on some of the comments on the YouTube side of the clip from the Tyra show, some people liked what I had to say. Others felt I should be kicked, beaten, and punched in the face. But it seems the general consensus was there were so many interruptions, it was really hard to hear what was being said. So I want to take a few minutes, lay out the main points I was trying to make on the program, and then evaluate them, think them through for yourself. Is that fair enough? Let me make clear that this was not a show about people who are intersexed, nor is it a show about gay or lesbian issues. Just want to be clear on that. And I think we can agree that we all want what's best for the kids. Everyone involved in this wants what's best for the kids. And sometimes the most loving and compassionate thing to do is not always the easiest, but I think we've all experienced that in life also. Let me ask you this. Can we agree that ideally, if these kids could be changed from the inside out and be at home with their bodies and their biological sex, that that would be the best course of action? That would be the best outcome we could hope for. Can we agree on that? I mean, you think otherwise, the trauma a little kid has...
We'll jump in here. So you can hear my approach. You can hear my appeal. You can hear the fact that I'm seeking to be sensitive to this issue and just say, can we agree that the best thing would be for someone to be at home in their own biological body rather than send a kid to school dressed as the opposite sex, traumatize that kid, traumatize the kids around them, and put them on hormone blockers when they get into their teen years or come into puberty, and then offer them sex change surgery with hormones for life after that, and they'll never be a fully functioning male or female? Is that so unreasonable? Look at some of the responses to this clip. The so-called professor is using just disgusting rhetoric. You know, isn't this amazing? And I don't doubt, friends, that this is what this person is hearing and feeling. The so-called professor, and notice I'm a so-called professor, is using just disgusting rhetoric. Conversion therapy has never worked, and goes on. Another, we show ignorance and lack of tolerance for the supposed view because all those people that know understand that it's a load of BS and will only bring harm and suffering to the people that he refers to. Their methods of thinking, because I'm religious, regress humanity, not progress. History and science have proven that you, speaking to someone that was standing up for me, and the doctor always end up sounding about as moronic as Congan monkeys throwing feces at inanimate tree stumps for seemingly no reason. Oh, how delightful. And then ends with, shut up. I'm sick of people trying to use religion to justify prejudice and bigotry. There is no justification for those things. And someone asked, where is this man in this clip specifically being a bigot? And of course, people rail on this. Jeff Jacoby is a conservative columnist with the Boston Globe, which makes him a very rare species there. In fact, that's his role there. And he wrote this years ago, dare to suggest that homosexuality may not be something to celebrate, and you instantly are a Nazi. Offer to share your teachings of Christianity or Judaism with students struggling with homosexuality, and you become as vile as a Ku Kluxer, which I've experienced firsthand. There is a 12-year-old boy put up a clip on YouTube opposing same-sex marriage based on the Bible. 12-year-old boy. Here's a response to him. And the language is ugly. It's not profane, but it's ugly. You, just like everyone else who is against gay marriage, is a mentally retarded bigot. No exceptions. Now go to hell. When we organized our God Has a Better Way rally in Charlotte last year to invade the gay pride event with the love of God, to pray and intercede, and to send people in with the message of Jesus in a way that would be non-disruptive to the event, except for light shining in darkness and truth in the midst of deception. But our folks were going in, having signed a code of conduct that the police told us personally, if every event had something like this, would be extraordinary. And here's a response before it even happened. What a vile group of religious bigots. In my forthcoming book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, should be out early next year. Put it on your list of, have folks order it for you early for Christmas or for Hanukkah or for your birthday or for your 50th anniversary in the year 2040. Have them order this for you as an advance gift. I have a chapter dealing with the issue of hate speech that is called Jewish Hitlers, Christian Jihadists, and the Magical Effects of Pushing the Hate Button. And this whole diversity thing goes one way only. Target found this out recently. This year, Target was boycotted because they made a donation, $150,000 donation, to Minnesota Forward. And Minnesota Forward is a group that supports Minnesota gubernatorial candidate Tom Emmer. And according to press release, newspaper ads taken out, Target should be boycotted. Gay groups called for this because Tom Emmer has aligned himself with, quote, radical anti-gay groups. Despite CEO Greg Steinhafel's August 5th apology on the company site, Target lost one-third of its buzz score in the course of 10 days. And here's the gripe. Monica Meyer, interim head of the gay rights group Outfront Minnesota, said this: a lot of people feel betrayed by this place where everybody goes to shop and you get to see them at Pride, meaning the gay pride event, and you feel good that you're supporting a corporation that's giving back to the community, except you're going to boycott them if they say, you know, marriage is the union of a man and a woman, and we'll support a candidate that holds that, although they claimed that supporting Tom Emmer was not for social reasons. It was for his economic policies. That's why Target's supporting him. But no, diversity, inclusion only goes one way. And if you don't agree with that, then you can be targeted, as Target was. Listen to what Tom Emmer said, gubernatorial candidate. The sad part to me is I thought we were supposed to be able to exercise our rights of free speech. We're supposed to celebrate the fact that we have different perspectives. Oh, no. Tolerance, diversity are one-way streets only. We come back, Islam and Israel. Okay, before I share some fascinating thoughts by Mark Stein about Islam, and it ties in with some of the discussion in the first half of the program about intolerance, bigotry, and some of the double standards that we face. Let me remind you that while you're waiting for my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, to come out, that we do have two extensive DVD resources. We'll have links to these on our website and on the Line of Fire site. Homosexuality, Church and Society, and Can You Be Gay and Christian? The latter features my debate with gay activist Harry Knox, claims to be a born-again Christian practicing homosexual, and is on President Obama's Faith Advisory Council. One more note. Before the Tyra Show, again, it re-aired yesterday, which is what got me on this topic, I wrote, I emailed Professor Paul McHugh. He is the head of the psychiatric department at Johns Hopkins University. He is a distinguished leader in this field, well-known, author of many, many articles. And he was instrumental in Johns Hopkins banning sex reassignment surgery in the early 80s, and they've not restarted it. I asked him, do you believe that children who identify as transgender would be best served by living out who they feel they are on the inside, thus cross-dressing, hormone blockers, and even sex reassignment surgery, or by receiving professional help for gender identity disorder? This is his response. I hold that interfering medically, this is November 18th, I hold that interfering medically or surgically with the natural development of young people claiming to be transgendered is a form of child abuse. Thus said Dr. Paul McHugh. Okay, Mark Stein wrote an article 2 days ago called Bowing to Islam's View of Us. Let me share a few comments here with you that I think are very insightful. Now, Mark Stein, reading his stuff has been likened to being sandblasted. He is quite acerbic and will let the punches fly, and often with tremendous insight in the process. He says, too many people in the free world have internalized Islam's view of them. A couple of years ago, I visited Guantanamo and subsequently wrote that if I had to summon up Gitmo in a single image, it would be the brand new copy of the Quran in each cell to reassure incoming prisoners that the filthy infidels, that's us, haven't touched the sacred book with their unclean hands. The Qurans are hung from the walls in pristine, sterilized surgical masks. It's one thing for Muslims to regard as infidels as unclean, but it's hard to see why it's in the interest of us infidels to string along with it and thereby validate their bigotry. What does that degree of prostration before their prejudices tell them about us? It's a problem that Muslims think we're unclean. It's a far worse problem that we go along with it. Take this no-name pastor. He's talking about Pastor Terry Jones. That's a right name, isn't it? That was going to burn the Quran. Take this no-name pastor, that's how Mark Stern refers to him, from an obscure church who was threatening to burn the Quran. He didn't burn any buildings or women and children. He didn't even burn a book. He actually hadn't laid a finger on a Quran, and yet the mere suggestion that he might do so prompted the President of the United States to denounce him, and the Secretary of State and the commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan, various G7 leaders, and golly, even Angelina Jolie. President Obama has never said a word about honor killings of Muslim women. Secretary Clinton has never said a word about female genital mutilation. General Petraeus has never said a word about the rampant buggery of prepubescent boys by Pushtun men in Kandahar, in other words, pedophilia. But let an obscure man in Florida so much as raise the possibility that he might disrespect a book, an inanimate object, and the most powerful figures in the Western world feel they have to weigh in. Mark Stein continues, aside from all that, this obscure church's website has been shut down. Its insurance policy has been canceled. Its mortgage has been called in by its bankers. Why? As Diana West wrote, why was it necessary, even seemingly, to make this pastor a non-person? Okay. To clarify the ground rules, if you insult Christ, the media report the issue as freedom of expression. A healthy society has to have bold, brave, transgressive artists willing to question and challenge our assumptions, etc. But if it's Muhammad, There's just no longer freedom of expression, but the need for respect and sensitivity toward Islam. All right. Another quote from here. Forget about notorious right-wing hate mongers like me. Look at how liberal progressive protect their own. Do you remember a lady called Molly Norris? Again, Mark Stein's words. So she's the dopey Seattle cartoonist who cooked up Everybody Draws Muhammad Day just as a playful idea, because if you put up any image of Muhammad in Islam, it's considered blasphemous. And then when she realized what she'd stumbled into, tried to back out of it, I regard Miss Norris as, to rewrite Stalin, a useless idiot. Again, Mark Stein's words. And she wrote to Mark's mailbox to object. I stand by what I wrote then about so on and so forth. Well, the fact is, she's had to go on the run. On the advice of the FBI, she's been forced to go into hiding. Where's the outcry over this? So again, Mark Stein is saying he's no fan of Molly Norris. All right. I told you up front, he doesn't pull his punches, and he expresses things in ways and tones that would not be my way and tone. But I appreciate so many of the insights in the midst of this. So where's the outrage? There was an outrage, an outcry. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't burn the Quran. And I didn't think it was a good idea anyway, not for fear of man, but just for wisdom of God and for advancing the gospel in the Muslim world. I've got no issue with being hated, rejected for the truth. I don't want to be hated, rejected for my own foolishness or my own zeal, which may not be based on wisdom. So Mark Stein here is saying, from the president to Secretary of State to General Petraeus, to don't burn the Quran, to the website being shut down, to the mortgage being called in, and on, because a pastor says he's going to burn the Quran to draw attention to radical Islam. Molly Norris playfully says, let's have a draw Muhammad Day. Realize, okay, bad move, tries to back out of it, and as a result, told by the FBI, she better go into hiding. Where is the outrage? Stein says this, if you want to measure the decline in Western civilization's sense of self-preservation, go back to Valentine's Day 1989, get out the Fleet Street reports on the Salman Rushdie fatwa. This is when he was threatened with death. It still hangs over his head for his book, The Satanic Verses. And read the outrage of his fellow London literati at what was being done to one of the mainstays of the Hampstead dinner party circuit. Then compare it with the feeble passivity of Molly Norris's own colleagues and an American cartoonist being forced to abandon her life. So you realize there is something to this of buying into the way that others perceive us. And because we are perceived, now to tie these two threads together, by the gay, lesbian community and other liberals as being intolerant and bigoted in our views of Jesus and Scripture, many of us unconsciously retreat. Many of us begin to apologize for our faith. Many of us, at times, are even guilty of being ashamed of Jesus and his words because the world shames him and his words. Friends, we must walk in love and compassion, but speak the truth without fear. What about the settlements in Israel? We'll talk about it next. I just received a note that tells me that people are listening to what we're saying. The note said, this stuff makes my blood boil. The double standard is just so unjust. Absolutely, and we need to wake up to that reality. By the way, sorry I haven't gotten to your calls yet. Just a lot to say, a lot to talk about on these subjects. But I am committed, by God's grace, to exposing the intolerance and bigotry on the other side. Now, it may mean that at times you have to be publicly humiliated, crucified, mocked, scorned, and reply with gentleness, and that exposes the spirit on the other side. But we overcome evil with good. We overcome hatred with love. See, if we play into the hatred, then all you get is more hatred. You play into the violence, not only you're violating the Jesus way with violence and hatred, but you play into it. It becomes a vicious cycle that only grows. The way to overcome it, break the cycle, overcome evil with good, overcome hatred with love, continue to lay our lives down for a dying world while standing in an uncompromised way for the truth and refusing to back down so as to save our lives. Better to be obedient and lose our reputation or more than save our little kingdom and deny the truths of God. We've got the same double standards going on with Israel as well. And I'm going to try to grab a call or two before we're done here. So thanks for your patience. From Hamas leader Khalid Mashal, "We'll continue to kill illegal settlers." He says that if the international community does not force Israel to retreat to 1967 borders, then they will continue to kill, quote, illegal settlers on our land. The United States has joined the international community in expressing disappointment or condemnation over the fact that Israel has lifted a 10-month moratorium on settlements. You say, okay, well, why are they building in all these provocative places? Hang on, we're talking about apartment buildings, housing in Jerusalem. Yeah, in Jerusalem. The Palestinian Authority has said, no, that's going to be part of our future state, so you cannot build there. This is Jerusalem. Jews building in Jerusalem because of overcrowding. Our administration has put tremendous pressure on Prime Minister Netanyahu to cease entirely from this process. And Israel put a 10-month moratorium on the building, and then it ended, and they would not renew it. So, of course, that's destroying the peace talks. The whole thing is the moratorium was unjust to start. So think of this. Think of this. Hamas is killing people. Khalid Mashal was asked about last month's terror attack near Kiryat Arba, in which four Israelis were killed by Hamas gunmen. Mashal said that Hamas will continue to, quote, kill illegal settlers on our land. He stated that Israeli settlers were the source of the problem, and he failed to understand why the international community gets upset when we defend our people by confronting Israeli killings. May I ask where the international condemnation of this was? Most of you don't even know that it happened. I'm not faulting you for not knowing. It was not that widely reported that four Israelis were killed by Hamas gunmen. But when Israel says, you know, we're going to keep building housing for our own people in Jerusalem, there is international condemnation, and this is supposedly destroying the peace process. And international leader after international leader, including the leader of the UN, weighing in on this. Now, let me encourage you for a moment in terms of what to do with your boiling blood. Realize that this is a spiritual battle. Realize that we're not fighting flesh and blood. Realizing that in this world there will not be justice, and in this world there will not even be rational thinking, and in this world, to the extent we identify with Jesus, we'll be hated and rejected the same way he was. Therefore, our weapons must be spiritual. Prayer, the fullness of the Spirit, holy living, the truth of the Scriptures, an unashamed stand for the gospel, and the confidence that God's ways will win out in the end, and that light will shine in darkness, and that love will endure, and the meek will inherit the earth. That is the reality. Truth will triumph, friends. 2 Corinthians 13:8. We can do nothing against the truth but for the truth. Proverbs 21:30. There's no wisdom or counsel or plan that will stand against the Lord. We come back. I'll try to take a call or two, and then some further reflections and some bottom line observations about the situation with Bishop Eddie Long we discussed yesterday. Oh, by the way, tomorrow I'm going to have someone scientific research background who is thoroughly convinced that Noah's Ark has been discovered. That's coming away tomorrow. All right. Had a couple of folks waiting I was going to talk to, but not able to wait. So let me get on with some other issues 866-34-TRUTH if you still want to try to squeeze your way in. We've been talking about intolerance, bigotry. We've been talking about double standards. And I want to throw something out. I want to throw something out for you to think about, okay? I asked yesterday what were your thoughts, first thoughts, when you heard about the serious allegations against Bishop Eddie Long. I said that my first thoughts were, I hope it's not true, although I've heard for years that such scandals were going to be breaking all over America and young men coming forth with charges of sexual abuse against a number of black Christian leaders. Again, I still hope it is not true. And then self-examination. Am I walking hypocritically in any ways before God? In any way, am I preaching one thing and doing another and not walking in the fear of the Lord? But of course, the deepest feeling you have is the sadness and grief because of the reproach that comes to the body of Christ. Well, I was reviewing some of the comments that were posted on Facebook. One of them said this: the first reaction was mega church and how God is so against these people who are so self-absorbed. Just the mercy and grace of God are in action. However, God will not be mocked, many exclamation points. Now, isn't that comment one of judgment based on outward appearance or judgment based on non-scriptural categories? In other words, on what basis are we judging someone because of the size of a congregation or even someone's personal wealth or saying a person is self-absorbed? Another comment: we have an institutional church system that is not set up in line with God's word. As long as Christians continue to exalt a man in a congregation, this type of thing will continue to happen. You know, I think that in the early church, the leaders were highly esteemed by many of the other believers. They didn't have mega churches, but I believe that these people were highly esteemed. Is that a judgmental comment? Not in the sense of John 7:24, which calls us to make righteous judgments, but one that's perhaps judging by something outward. I appreciate the sentiments and I appreciate the concerns, but I'm concerned about judgmentalism in our own midst. Mega churches are a joke, is another comment. The only pressure they're under is deceiving the people. If he failed long before this. He needs to admit it and step down and repent. The system is wrong and ungodly. Many of you serve Christ, and Christ is bringing this system down. So mega churches are a joke. Let me bottom line it for you. We must be careful to walk in the injunction of Jesus, who said in John 7:24, don't judge by outward appearance, but judge or make righteous judgments. I'll be candid with you. When I see someone dressed up in certain robes or regalia, or a Baptist or charismatic leader dressing up like that, that bothers me. I think it's wrong. I think it distracts from the fact that we are all priests. But on the flip side, if it's someone I esteem and honor, like Pastor Richard Wurmbrand, who wore a ministerial collar, I don't think twice about it. Maybe there are some double standards in us. Maybe we'll excuse someone that's in our camp and condemn someone that's not in our camp. And we, if we're going to condemn the injustice and unrighteousness and double standard of the world, must look at our own hearts to say, are we holding to double standards as well? Or are we judging righteously? Check out the resources listed and the links at askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. And tomorrow, a passionate defender of the fact, in his eyes, that Noah's Ark has been discovered.